from WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We've started this new year in the midst of a partial government shutdown, with ongoing civil wars and humanitarian crises in Syria and Yemen, tensions with Russia and North Korea, and the looming global threat of climate change. If you follow the news, it can be easy to feel like the world is going to hell in a handbasket. But Steven Pinker says that would be inaccurate. The Harvard scholar argues that a hard look at the numbers reveals that our world today is safer, cleaner, and more equal than at any time in the past. That's the case he makes in his most recent book, Enlightenment Now: The Case for Reason, Science, Humanism, and Progress. That book was published almost a year ago, but the message is no less relevant today. Steven Pinker, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thank you.
In this day and age, it seems impossible that we would all agree on anything, but you say, in fact, there is almost universal agreement on what constitutes quality of life, kind of how we define that. So what are some of the criteria that you look at in terms of looking at human welfare?
Well, sheer longevity would have to be up there. A long life is better than a short life. And that would include children surviving. Children are vulnerable, and throughout human history, large numbers have not made it to their fifth birthday. About a third, 250 years ago, did not live to see their fifth birthday. Mothers surviving childbirth, I would have to be up there. And then beyond sheer longevity, most of us would add education as one of the things that that makes life worthwhile. Being literate, having a basic education, knowing something about the world, about history, about science. And then prosperity, that would be a third a dimension of well-being, not being destitute, having enough to eat, having shelter, being able to enjoy simple luxuries. And then a fourth would be safety. Can you walk the street without fear of being assaulted or robbed or raped? Is your country at peace rather than being at war? Then on top of that, there are dimensions like closeness of social connections, opportunities to make contact with family and friends. There's cultural stimulation, access to the great works of art and music and cinema and theater, opportunities to see the world, to enjoy the cultural and natural wonders of the world, to visit the Grand Canyon or the or New York. I won't get added to the list, but I think most people would agree that if people had all of those benefits, that's a better life than lacking them.
So if we look at some of those, it's well known that obviously life expectancy has increased globally over time. But if we look at some of these other things like education or safety, you know, we often worry that, in fact, things are getting worse. So make the case that things are actually getting better.
Well, in terms of safety, rates of violent crime, especially in the United States, have plunged since the early 1990s. And that's true for the world as a whole, that rates of homicide, which is the most reliable indicator of violent crime, have come down. In the United States, they've come down by about 50% since the 1990s. In terms of education, the first thing that you'd want to look at is just literacy, that can kids read and write? And for most of European history, about 15% of the population could read, the wealthiest, the most privileged. Now it is 80% across the entire planet, 90% for people under the age of 25. And not just boys, but girls. The world is very close to gender parity in education. And even the most backward parts of the world, like Afghanistan and Pakistan, the rates of enrollment in school for girls has shot up.
What about happiness?
For countries where we have records of people indicating how good they think their lives are over a span of decades, 85% of them have shown an increase. Interestingly, the United States is not one of them. Our happiness has pretty much flatlined for 70 years. But the United States is a pretty happy country in the first place, so there's a little less room for us to grow compared to countries like Indonesia and India and Russia and China, which have shown pretty steep increases.
Do you know this attitude that we tend to have that things feel like they're getting worse? Is that maybe an American problem and part of this flatlining of happiness in America?
It partly is. We have come down as a country from the American high of the 50s and early 60s, where it just seemed that everything was going great. America was a beacon of liberty to the world, and we were going into space and driving big cars with V8 engines. And then there was a series of disillusionments, the fiasco of and tragedy of Vietnam, an increased awareness of poverty and pollution, a huge increase in the crime rate starting in the 1960s, and so even though our lives have undoubtedly gotten better, that we're far more affluent than we were in the 50s and 60s, our happiness has not kept track. And also, there's a general pessimism, paradoxically, in the countries that are best off. In France, for example, another affluent Western democracy, only 3% of the population will say that life is getting better, even though it has. Frenchmen are happier than they were several decades ago. So there is a disconnect, partly because of the view of the world from journalism, which cherry picks all of the worst things happening anywhere in the world at a given time and delivers them to your doorstep. Journalism reports things that happen, not things that don't happen. And generally, things that happen all of a sudden are bad things. They're shootings, they're wars, they're collapses of buildings, they're breakouts of a disease. Things that get better creep up a percentage point or two at a time, and they never happen on a Thursday in October and appear above the fold in a local newspaper. So one example from an economist named Max Roser is that the papers could have run the headline, 173,000 people escaped from extreme poverty yesterday, every day for the last 30 years. But they never ran that headline, with the result that 1.25 billion people escaped from poverty and no one knows about it. And on top of that, there's also part of the culture of journalism that, and I've spoken to many journalists who say that it's their duty to report the worst news and to scare people out of their complacency. And so when there are advances in well-being, they're often deliberately ignored in favor of stories that prevent people, God forbid, from feeling good about the world.
Well, Steven Pinker, not to deflect blame away from my own profession, but you are a cognitive scientist, and you've also argued that there's an aspect to this pessimism or negative view of where we are that kind of stems from inaccurate memory, that we have these rosy memories, this nostalgia about the past, and that colors inaccurately our view of the present. I mean, from a psychological perspective, what's going on there?
Yes, we are wired for nostalgia in the sense that old memories of negative events, they don't disappear, but we forget how bad they were. An example that I hear, I can't be an authority on this, but I hear it from people who have gone through the experiences that when women give birth, they always forget how bad it was the previous time. it's not that you could forget giving birth ever.
I can testify to that.
Right. And that's a general phenomenon of memory, that there may have been, you know, an arduous hiking ordeal or you know, camping fiasco, and we remember it, but the misery at the time tends to fade over the years. And so, and that's true for the state of the nation as well. You have many reminiscences of the good old days in which you know, factory workers had decent jobs and with benefits and had them for their lives. But we forget the searing exposés of how awful factory life was in the 1960s and 70s. We forget things like double-digit inflation and double-digit unemployment at the same time. We forget lines around the block to get gasoline. We forget the soaring costs of commodities like coffee and sugar and meat. These are all things that I grew up with. And, you know, I remember them. And I'm surely the people of my generation, the baby boomers who write these nostalgic pieces, must remember them too. But they just remember how discouraging they were at the time.
I wonder if there's an aspect of the shifting baselines phenomenon here that, you know, we often hear about how humans are so good at adapting that we can get used to declining conditions and, you know, stop expecting more. But this is kind of the opposite, maybe, that we can get used to things being so much better that we forget how much it has changed and forget how much worse it could be.
Yes, there is something to that. There was an idea that no longer believed in the strong form of that we all are on a hedonic treadmill. That is, our happiness always adapts to our current circumstances, so that no matter how well off or badly off we are, we always return to the same overall sense of well-being. That turns out to be too strong. When people win the lottery, they really are happier. And when people suffer a loss, they absolutely are sadder over long periods of time. But still, there is some adaptation. We do tend to take our good fortunes somewhat for granted.
Steven Pinker, many of the ideas that you've presented in Enlightenment Now have gotten some pushback on a variety of fronts, one of which is simply to say, okay, what you're looking at tend to be large-scale averages or total numbers, and while those may have, you know, improved or changed, only looking at that number misses things like disparities or diminishes the awful experiences of those who are experiencing war or famine or poverty. How do you respond to that?
It's exactly backwards. What appreciating the numbers tells you is that there are far fewer people who are experiencing poverty or war or immiseration. And so it is absolutely true that the fact that progress has occurred doesn't mean that we should stop working for still more progress. It emboldens us to deal with the suffering that exists, knowing that in the past, when people have tried to reduce suffering, they've succeeded.
That's an important point, that documenting progress doesn't mean that progress was inevitable or that continued progress is inevitable. How does focusing, in your opinion, on that positive side of the equation help lead to future progress?
You have to not think magically about the world. That is, that if progress has occurred, it's not because of some mysterious force that has lifted us upward. It isn't God smiling at us. It isn't fortune or karma. It's a result of people trying to solve problems. The idea is not to celebrate the progress, but to try to understand it. What were the causes, and let's do more of them. And since the world is always changing, the answers that were true 50 years ago may not be true today, but it calls for all the more study to figure out what has the best chances of improving life still further.
Steven Pinker is the Johnstone Family Professor of Psychology at Harvard University and author of half a dozen books, most recently Enlightenment Now, The Case for Reason, Science, Humanism, and Progress. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Up next, junk food or junk science? Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.